Firstly, thank you for having me here, inviting me to come and speak. And am I on? Yes, I'm on, yeah? Dave, I'm on? Okay, brilliant. As soon as I walked through the door, John said hello to Dave, and he's in the back, and then Dave said hello to me, and he says, do you remember that I was Dave's camp leader on my very last camp with EMW in 2017? So I have got a photo here that I quickly pulled up on Facebook. So I've got a picture of Dave when he was really little. And he's wearing a tie. Does he wear a tie to church normally? Shame on you, Dave. Shame on you, Dave. But I've got a lovely photo here. And if you want to see it afterwards, I'll show you a photo of Dave later. But just a reminder. And then I was in Krakow last night with a man named Alan. And when I came here a few years ago, I was at the ACW kind of conference, and there was Ruth and Hillary were standing in the kitchen, and they said to me, where are you from? And I said, I'm moving to a place in Krakow. And they said, oh, there's a man who's just moved from here to Krakow. Can you keep an eye out for him? So then I moved to Krakow, and then I went to church there, and I met a man there, and I said, where are you from? He said, oh, I've moved from Newtown. And I said, oh, somebody from the church here told me to... Anyway, so then I came back to Newtown the year after, and I took a picture of Alan, and I said, look, I've met Alan, and I showed yourselves. And then last night I was with Alan again, and Alan said, what are you doing tomorrow? I said, I'm going to Newtown. I'm going to have dinner with a guy called John Perkins. And he said, oh, I know John Perkins. So it's amazing, isn't it, in God's providence that sometimes people who you think... are like Alan, who might you think are far from God, that God isn't far from them. And that's something to kind of rejoice in, that just by having Dave there and having Ruth there and having Alan, who's in Krakow, who I was sitting down, who's a widow, having a drink with, and he was, you know, we don't know where he is with the Lord, but he seems to be asking questions, that God is not far from each one of us. And that's an encouragement. So if you know anyone that isn't a Christian, Andy Christofides, for example, I give you an example. Andy used to have a youth group, is that right? A youth group in his house. And he would have loads and loads of young people come to his house. And I used to be one of them, okay? But I was one of the troublemakers, okay? I was one of the troublemakers. So I went to Andy Christofides' house for many, many years until I got kind of involved with the wrong crowd and I stopped going. And prison cell, all that kind of stuff. And then 10 years later, I became a Christian. And I remember kind of chatting to Andy and asking him questions and things like that, and just didn't want to know anything about it. And I moved to Exeter. And as I was sitting having dinner with John and Hillary, I noticed that I know your son-in-law, who is an Exeter as well. So that's the small world we live in. But I didn't want to have anything to the church. It wasn't anything to do with you, Andy, okay? You were okay, it was just everyone else. So I left, I was a Cardiff boy, basically, if you know where Andy's from. I was a Cardiff boy. So back in 2003, I left Cardiff, and I went along to see my friend, because I wanted to have a fresh start, because life wasn't going well for me. I'd stopped going to church when I was 16. I was now 25. I didn't really find anything satisfying in life. I tried everything. I tried drinking, I tried traveling, I tried work, I tried money, I tried gambling. I had a gambling addiction for about 2 years. I got in trouble with the law. I got arrested. I tried everything and just couldn't find a way to be satisfied. So I left. I said, I'm going to try a clean break. I even tried traveling across the world. I went to Canada. That didn't work out. And I thought, let's have a clean break. So I went to Exeter. I had one friend there who was a Christian, and he put me up, and I started to look for a job. And this is what happened. And if you remember nothing else of what I'm going to show you this afternoon, this evening, it's this, is that I was given a very absurd option of finding out about Jesus. And this was the absurd option. I was invited to a pub to have a meal, and I could buy whatever I wanted. I could have a pint of beer and I could go to the pub, and there I could listen to somebody talk about Jesus. And if I wanted to say anything, I could, but I didn't have to go to a church. Now, absurd as that sounds, going to a pub to find out about Jesus, and a lot of Christians would find that quite difficult or find that quite challenging. For me, that was the safest place that supported me to hear about Jesus. Because the week before that, somebody invited me to church, and I said no. I said I didn't want to go to church, because I remember I'd stopped going to church at 16, and I didn't want to have anything to do with Andy, I didn't want to have anything to do with Jill, I didn't want to have anything to do with any Christians at all, but somebody invited me to the pub. And in the pub, I was able to sit down, and I was able to have a pint, and I was able to listen to somebody talk about Jesus. And I argued with them, like, I was probably quite hostile in the way I argued. And I went that week, and I went the week after, and within 3 weeks, I put my trust in the Lord Jesus Christ. And it was simply this, that somebody gave me an opportunity to hear the gospel in a way that I was comfortable with. And as soon as I became a Christian, I was ready to then go to church, and I went to church, and I got involved with as much as I could get involved with. I went to the toddlers, and I helped out with mums and toddlers. I went to the youth group. I helped out with the youth group. I went along to both services. I went along to the Christian Union. It was simply this. I was thinking, if God has saved me from an eternity in hell, then that is a game changer in everything. That's a game changer in absolutely everything. And I think at that stage, when I was 25, and I went to university in Exeter, I started my business degree, I started studying, I was going to church, and I was thinking, this is amazing, isn't it, that I was destined to go to hell. I couldn't change my mind, and I wouldn't change my mind, but it was all down to the mercy of God that he decided to save me. And I think grasping that actually wasn't anything to do with me, and actually, if it was my choice, I would carry on living the way I wanted to live, but that God had plucked me out of the darkness, that was a game changer. And in the most absurd option, I was invited to go to a pub, and I took it, and that's how I became a Christian. So I'm just going to read from Scripture, just some verses that I find really helpful as the basis for the ministry that I've been called to. And if you want to interrupt me at any point this evening as I show you pictures, then stop. Because if I just show you that already rings some alarm bells, okay? It says my name, Paul Daniel, in case you've forgotten who I am. And I'm an evangelist with AECW, so I don't work for AECW. I'm not employed by AECW. I work with them. So I work under their umbrella. I'm an evangelist for the churches, as in people can use me if they want to use me. They don't have to use me. But what I do is I consult churches and I equip churches in evangelism. And as soon as I mention the word consult, people start having alarm bells. What on earth does that mean? So I'm going to kind of explain to you what that means. And every time I describe something, if I've confused you, then please ask me, okay? Because I don't want you to get to the end and think, what on earth was he talking about? Because if I'm honest, there's not really anything you can compare this to, because there's not really anyone else who's doing this kind of job. And I want you to see that actually this is about people's eternity, and it really, really matters. It really, really matters about people's eternity. And I'm going to read from 1 Corinthians chapter 9. I'm sure you're familiar with this. And it's Paul, and he writes to the church, and he says this: "For though I am free from all, I've made myself a servant to all, that I might win more of them. To the Jews I became as a Jew, in order to win Jews. To those under the law, I became as one under the law, though not being myself under the law, that I might win those under the law. To those outside the law, I became as one outside the law, not being outside the law of God, but under the law of Christ, that I might win those outside the law. To the weak, I became weak, that I might win the weak. I have become all things to all people, that by all means I might save some. I do it all for the sake of the gospel, that I may share with them in its blessings." You know, that it's a familiar verse, isn't it? That I might win some. But to me, that's not the thing I want to get at. It's a few verses above that, and it's this. As Paul's explaining his background of being an apostle and his rights, he says this. He says, "Nevertheless, we have not made use of this right, but we endure anything rather than put an obstacle in the way of the gospel of Christ." And it's that word endure, that Paul was willing to endure anything on almost everything for the sake of the gospel. And you hear about his shipwrecks, you hear about being bitten and famine and the sword. He's willing to endure everything for the sake of the gospel. And when you look back at your conversion, and I think sometimes we have that honeymoon period, don't we, of our conversions, and then we kind of get used to it. If we stop and reflect for a moment that Jesus Christ came to the world to die on a cross for our sin, and you can repeat this and you can memorize it, for God so loved the world that he gave his one and only son, and you sit there and you say, well, he died for my sin, to remove my sin as far as the east is from is the west, and he endured the cross, and then you sit there and think, actually, he did that so that I would not be in an eternity in hell. It makes you really think twice, doesn't it? About an eternity in hell where the worm does not die and the fire isn't quenched, and it is forever, and you're conscious. It changes the way you look at everyone in the world and around you, that I am willing and I want to be willing to endure anything and everything for the sake of the gospel. And somebody had this absurd idea, let's go and do Christianity Explored in a pub. But let's do it. Let's do it. We might look silly. We might look foolish. We might be looked down upon by some churches because we're doing it in a pub. But actually, we're doing it for the sake of those, because there are some people who'd feel really uncomfortable coming to a church building, but actually they'd feel more comfortable coming to a room in a pub that's semi-private where they can hear something of the gospel. And that there is the basis of what I do as an evangelist. So the key question that I ask as an evangelist is this: what supports the hearing of the gospel? What supports the hearing of the gospel? That's my one important question as an evangelist. It's the question I ask in any work that I do, is what supports the hearing of the gospel? So when John Orchard invited me to church when I went to Exeter for the first time, because I've had enough of life, and he said, do you want to come to church? The answer was no, because actually that wasn't going to support me hearing the gospel, because I wasn't going to go at all. Yeah, the answer was I don't want to go. The next week, when somebody says, do you want to go to the pub and hear some guy talk about Christianity, that did support the hearing of the gospel, and I was willing to go to that, but not this. And so in the ministry that I do, when I'm talking to Christians or talking to churches and I'm trying to advise them or consult them or trying to help them to do things, I'm really asking that question: is in your church, this might not work, that method might not work, helping support the hearing of the gospel, but this might. So let's do that and trust and pray that God would bless it, and God, by his mercy, would act in power. So I never claim, and I can't claim, and you know you can't claim it, we can't convert anyone. That's God's job. All we can do is help people hear the gospel. And my role as an evangelist in working with the ACW is not just work with ACW churches, it's working with gospel churches. So I work with Presbyterian churches, I work with Baptist churches, I work with independent churches. I simply ask the question, how can I help you this week, this month, this term, this year, to help more people hear the gospel? So when I show you photos now, I'm not going to tell you about all these people that were converted, because that's not something that I can do. I can't say, oh, there's been a revival here. But I can say that all these things that I'm involved with are there helping people to hear the gospel. And if I can do that, then my prayer is, and the churches that I work with, is that they're praying that these people who are under the gospel, as Philippians says, God is at work, and he who begins a good work will bring it to completion. So it's a bit like with my friend Alan and your friend Alan. We're praying, aren't we, that if God has brought him amongst Christians and he's hearing the gospel, that at some point it will be brought to completion and he'll put his faith in Jesus. So does that make sense? Just the one question: what supports the hearing of the gospel? And all the pictures I'm going to show you, as daft as they might look, they all support the hearing of the gospel, and that's what I do. So that's me. I hope I've tried to describe what that means, what supports hearing the gospel. Okay, so this is, you all know what that is, okay? So top left, Matt Francis, that's, name the church? Deeside. Okay, Darren Dowie, church, location? Cumbran. Top right, Ivion Perkins. Pontardilice. Graham John, Swansea. James Sibley is going to go. Abergavenny, going to be the pastor at Free School Court, his first pastorate. John Williams, Gorsine and Swansea. P. Peter Milsom, chairman of the ACW, lives in Newport. Former friend of yours, isn't that right, Andy? And then there's me. By the way, I'm dark-skinned, exposure, okay? I don't show up. And that was a really bad hair day. It was my first Monday off in ages, okay? But this is a Monday morning Zoom meeting that we started at the beginning of lockdown. So virtually in the first 2 weeks of lockdown, when every single church was told, you cannot meet, we started this. And the idea of this was to get pastors together if they wanted to come. So not all pastors can come. So this is a representation of what was there last Monday. Every Monday there might be somebody else different. And it's about bringing men together and helping them to work through how we do church in a pandemic. John Williams was there, and Peter said to John Williams, John Williams, James Sibley is about to do his first pastorate. What encouragement would you give him? And actually, it's really important, isn't it, getting men together, because there are some who have just about to start their ministry. There are some who are coming towards the end of the ministry. And what's really interesting about this is from North to South Wales, okay? And then you'll have people from West Wales or South West Wales. It covers all of Wales, so ACW churches. And we're not just talking about physical meetings. We're talking about being online together, that every Monday morning, apart from bank holidays and apart from Christmas, we've met every single week. Now, that has never happened before. Normally, you'd only meet once or twice a year, but this is something that the pastors want to do because they want to learn from each other, they want to encourage each other, they want to trade ideas, they want to know some of the difficulties of meeting in a post-pandemic kind of or vaccinated environment. But that supports the hearing of the gospel. That really does. And I'll tell you why it supports hearing the gospel is because of that. So if you can just about see, can you see the bottom where it says work? That's where I live. I live in Crickhowell. And the top is Rhyl. So one day last year, I drove up to Rhyl for my first meeting. So I leave the house at 9 o'clock. So I've got a meeting in Rhyl with a pastor in Goson, Steve. Then I went over to meet Matt. Then I went over to Bala. Then I went over to Gwesalt. And then at 9 o'clock, I ended up here to meet with Lloyd and Tim. Okay. And the reason why I did that is face-to-face meetings are really, really important. So it's one thing kind of meeting online, but actually it's when you sit down with somebody face-to-face and you spend an hour talking with them over coffee, you get a better idea of some of the challenges and some of the struggles. And times like that balance with times on Zoom where you hear something and you're in a, I know there's 10 pastors and they're all kind of in a Zoom meeting room and they're all sharing ideas, but actually it's when you go and see them individually, then you get a better idea of some of the challenges going on. And the reason why I show that is that was a day for me, okay? So I left at 9 in the morning, I put the kids on the bus, they go to school, and I got home at midnight on that day. And the reason why that's really important is because my last stop was here in Newtown, and this was in the middle of the pandemic. And when I got to Newtown, I met with Tim and Lloyd after you all had been shuffled off outside, and I was asking Tim and Lloyd, what kind of things would be going on in Newtown? And Tim said, and Lloyd said, we've been doing this. And I said, well, it's really interesting that you say you've been doing this, because those are the things that some of the other churches have been struggling with. And so what I was able to do is I said to Lloyd straight afterwards, Lloyd, can you share some of your risk assessments with me about the things that you're doing? Within that week, I had, you know, double digits worth of requests for the things that you were doing as a church. And what you probably don't realize is the things that you were doing as a church back in October and November probably helped churches in double figures in November and December, but you all didn't know it. But it was actually people like me kind of going around, meeting pastors, spending time talking with them, asking the right question, then sharing that information. And that supported probably more people hearing the gospel at Christmas last year than if I had not done that route. And in order to do, I mean, how do I go back? Have you got a couple of slides back? I've missed that one really important picture, haven't I? I missed out a picture of my family, okay? There's meant to be a picture of my family on there. Maybe it's at the end. Can you see a picture of my family in there, Dave? It's probably not in there. But this is a family ministry. So my wife, Sian, is a GP. So she works part-time. And is there any GPs here? Any medics, okay? So she's a part-time GP. So today's a half day, but she's still not home yet, okay? So a part-time GP generally means a part-time GP working full-time hours. So she's a part-time GP, she works virtually full-time hours. On a full day, she'd leave for about 8 o'clock. She'll get home about 11 o'clock at night. But it's a family ministry, so my wife's work as a GP subsidises this ministry in order for me to kind of be on the road visiting pastors, visiting churches. And obviously we've got the three boys. I've got Elijah's going to be 10 this month, and then the twins, I've got twins, Zephan and Jed, they're going to be 6 the month after. So we've got three boys, my wife's GP, we've got 8 chickens, okay? So we live out in the countryside, and I've got 2 cats. I don't like cats, by the way. I only got the cats because of mice, okay? So they're really good hunters. So we live out in the countryside. We live in Crickhowell. And the reason why we're in Crickhowell is when my mother-in-law lives in Crickhowell as well. So she helps with childcare, you know, a couple of times a week. And generally, the routes around Wales are pretty good. So today, I went to Aberystwyth before I came here. Because I thought, well, I've got to go to Newtown. There's no point in me coming all the way to Newtown and going back. So I went out to Aberystwyth. I met with Rodri and met with somebody else from the church, and we had a chat about how things are there with a view to what can they be doing next, and then came back round here. But face-to-face meetings really do support the hearing of the gospel, because often the case is this, is that what you do or what you have or what you're good at is often what another church struggles with. And by sharing that information, actually, what you do is you support the hearing of the gospel. And more people got to hear the gospel last Christmas in churches you and I probably don't attend, but I go to, whether I'm preaching or meeting with a pastor, because of churches like you. And vice versa, I think Lloyd texted me and said, have you got something on this that somebody else might have answered? And this is something to do with ACW, is that the amount of sharing of resources has dramatically grown in the last 18 months. And that's God's providence that in the pandemic we've been able to rely on each other. So that's Zoom, that's face-to-face, and that's how it works together. So I try to spend half my time at home. So I've got an office in the house, and I spend my other half the time on the road. And the idea is when I go out on the road and I meet, say, for example, I meet Rodri today, or I meet you, that generates a certain amount of queries and amount of work, and then I take that work home, and then I pass that on. So that's how it works, 50% on the road, 50% at home. So who knows this chap? Right, this is Mike, okay? So this is an example of supporting the hearing of the gospel, okay? So I use Mike as an example. So Mike is a book lover and a general tinkerer. He goes to the church in Alfred Place. So I don't know if you know the church in Alfred Place. Alfred Place would probably self-confess themselves that they're more of a quite traditional church, and they would struggle sometimes reaching people with the gospel, maybe in ways that this church might not. And over lockdown, I suggested to Rodri, when we couldn't meet as churches, have you ever thought about doing testimonies? And you already do testimonies, don't you? Yeah, that's quite normal for you, put testimonies on. But they've never done testimonies like this. So I didn't have to go to see Mike. I spoke to Mike on the telephone. I got Mike to record his testimony on his phone. He sent it to me. I edited it. I put them on YouTube. And they must have had over 100 people view his testimony. But to me, and I hope it encourages you, that's 100 more people to hear his testimony than might not have. So therefore, you're supporting the hearing of the gospel. And then there was another testimony, there was another testimony, there was another testimony. And the reason why I went to Aberystwyth today is Mike was working in the bookshop today, in the church, which is in the bookshop that's next to the church. So I met with Rodri. I've never met Mike before, okay? He looks like that. I met him for the first time. And to say, well, what should we do next? So he's in the bookshop. How do we best use the bookshop to reach people for the gospel? So you can do things online, but at the same time, you need to be able to be there face-to-face and spend an hour with somebody talking about the challenges of running a Christian bookshop where the bookshop is next to the church, but it's way off it's not on the high street. And how do you make that more useful to support people hearing the gospel? So people like Mike. So it's not just churches that I build relationships with, it's individuals in churches. And if somebody like Mike says, like, I want to share the gospel, let's sit down, have a coffee, and let's bounce some ideas. That's really important as an evangelist to equip God's people for works of service. And it could just be that through the conversation today, that Mike comes up with a really good idea that's suitable for him and his family, and he puts that into practice that helps him share the gospel. And that's more people hearing the gospel supported by you know, supporting people hear the gospel, then we pray that God would work powerfully in and through Mike to bring people to salvation. But that's really important. And this comes from building relationships with churches and suggesting ideas. So the idea didn't come from a church calling me up and saying, "Paul, we'd like to do testimonies." It was, "Looking, how are you doing? What's going on in the church? How's pandemic going? Oh, I've noticed that this church has been doing testimonies. Have you ever thought about doing?" "No, we never thought about doing testimonies." "Ah, well, have a think about that. Do you know anyone who might do it?" "Oh, well, I know somebody who wants to reach people. Well, we'll start off with Mike." And then they did another 4 testimonies or 5 testimonies. And that's been probably viewed maybe 600 times, probably not as many as yours. But actually, for a church in Aberystwyth, that's a lot of people hearing the gospel. And that's really important. So supporting churches like this, getting people to be equipped and saying, "What can you do in pandemic? What can you do post-pandemic?" So that's Mike. This is a Presbyterian church. So I work under the umbrella of ACW. So the ACW don't tell me who I can work with. What Peter Milsom does is he encourages me and he helps me and he talks with me and he gives me his experience. And he basically says to me, "Listen, what you want to do around Wales is help the cause of the gospel with gospel churches." So the label doesn't matter. So if you call yourself a Presbyterian or a Baptist or an independent, I'm not interested, okay? Just not interested. I'm interested whether you're a Christian and whether you're a gospel church. Labels mean nothing to me, because you can have the right label, but you can end up not actually wanting to see people won for Christ, yeah? So the labels are relevant. So this church here is the biggest Presbyterian church in Gower. And I've known this church for many years, and I've been helping them partner with other churches and other pastors, because within the Presbyterian Church of Wales, there's very few men available to help in the cause of the gospel. So this church is partnered with a pastor who is from the ACW, and one of the pastors then takes all the Bible studies, takes one Sunday a month, and they support the hearing of the gospel by making sure they got regular ministry that is gospel ministry. And that those two pictures there, this is how a church responds in pandemic. So if you've got a good relationship with a church and you're saying, "Just because we've got COVID and we've got all the guidance, it's not a question of what we can't do, it's a question of what we can do." So my big thing is, what can we do, not what we can't do. So there is social distancing, wasn't there, which is no longer relevant. So this church says, "Yes, we can have children. We need social distancing." So what they did is they changed the name of their toddler group and called it on the right-hand side Wriggles and Giggles. So they only had kind of the real little ones that couldn't move around. They did that straight away when most churches wouldn't have even started or wanted to, because they were too afraid of how to read guidance or something. But these guys, they just got on with it. And then a few months later, when the sun was out and they had an opportunity to do more and have a church open day and have an evangelistic talk, they invited all the toddlers and all the Wriggles and Giggles and all the aunts and uncles and all the grandparents. And on the left-hand side is a picture of the front of the church. And they had 80 non-Christians turn up. Now, this is in the middle of pandemic. And for most conservative churches, they would struggle to do that. But that's an example of gospel churches that might have a different label, but they're doing gospel ministry and they're reaching people. And once again, what supports the hearing of the gospel is that all the 80 people on the left, if you invited them to church on a Sunday, they're probably not going to come. But if you invite them on a Saturday to an open day and you still present the gospel, and I was the one who was speaking, still presented the gospel in a way that, you know, the children can understand, the adults can understand, they're hearing something in the gospel, and you're just praying for them that God would do a work, and when he starts it, he would continue it, and you're praying that that church would grow. But you can pray for that church because they don't have a minister and they're looking for one, and trying to get ministers to go into the denomination is actually really challenging. But there are gospel churches that are there in the denomination, and sometimes they are doing more evangelism than churches that are independent. And that's a challenge for us, isn't it? But we don't always hear about these churches. So that's Tabernacle in Gower. Who's heard of Penuel and Roche? Okay, so Penuel and Roche, next to Newgale. So what supports the hearing of the gospel, Penuel and Roche? They have a 10:30 service. They've got a 4 o'clock service. And most churches had only one service over pandemic, didn't they? And then they started their evening service more recently. That's generally the general pattern. So I was filling in for somebody, and I said to Penuel and Roche, I filled in, I think it was in June, and then I was meant to be there in July. So I filled in June, and I said to them, listen, I'm back in 3 weeks, and you know, the gospel is really important, isn't it? You know, it's people's eternity. So I said, you're going to start your evening service. So as a visiting preacher, most visiting preachers, they visit, they preach, and then they leave. I said, but I'm back here in 3 weeks. So I said, how about this? Can I offer you a suggestion? Okay, that's the first thing as an evangelist, is saying to somebody out of courtesy, can I offer you a suggestion? If the answer to that is no, then generally I'll back off, okay? Or I'll find another way to say, can I offer you a suggestion? Because I'm Indian, I'm pushy. My wife's very pushy as well, by the way, but she's not Indian, she's Welsh. But that, we won't go there. So I said to them, listen, I'm back in 3 weeks, can I offer you a suggestion? Okay, so I'll tell you tonight. So I went to the evening service on this Sunday, and I said, I'm back in 3 weeks. I'm going to preach to you at 10:30 in the morning. You're all Christians, I'm going to preach to you. And then I'm going to come back at 4 o'clock, and I'm going to preach another sermon to you. I said, do you really want me to come back at 4 o'clock and preach another sermon to you when I've preached to you at 10:30, or are you willing to look at another option? Paul, tell us what your other option is. How about this? It's summer. You've got a garden at the back of your church. You're telling me that all the children have been coming to your church and have been planting fruit and veg and all this in this lovely cottage garden. So how about in 3 weeks when I'm back, instead of having an evening service at 4 o'clock in the church where I'll preach again to you, and I've already preached to you at 10:30, why don't we all go to the back garden and I'll preach to you again, but this time I'll preach to you an evangelistic. So I'll preach an evangelistic message, but this time you invite all your non-Christian friends, including the parents of the children who've planted all this stuff, and we can all sit at the back, we can have a barbecue, I'll do a quiz, but I'll still preach to you, but I'll preach to you a little bit shorter because there are lots of visitors here. Oh, Paul, I'm not sure about that because, you know, are they going to come? You know, it's a Sunday, are they going to come? 4 o'clock on a Sunday, you know, they wouldn't normally come, would they? And I said this, the parable of the wedding banquet. And the king says, go and invite everyone, everything's ready. And then they say no. Send them again. But then they kill the servants. Send them again. Go into the highways and byways. And I said to them, you do understand that there's an assumption here that people are going to say no. Just get over it. People are going to say no. That's not a reason not to do the things in the first place. We've got the gospel. Everything's ready. Off we go. Go and invite them. And if they say no, don't worry about it. Let them say no. Go and invite other people. Fair enough. 3 weeks later, turn back up at the church. I turn up with my gas barbecue, as absurd as it sounds. I put my gas barbecue into my car in Crickowell. I drive 2.5 hours to Penuel Roche, back up barbecue just in case. 43 people, non-Christians, turn up. One of the men there, his non-Christian wife turned up, who never comes to church. They brought the whole family with them. So there's like 13 members of non-Christian family. They're all sitting in the garden. They're having a quiz. They hear something of the gospel. And when the event finishes, none of them leave. None of them leave because they feel at home and the environment supported the hearing of the gospel. If it had been come along to 4 o'clock at the church building and our friend Paul Daniel is going to speak the gospel to you, I don't think they would have come. But because the environment had changed and what we were offering had changed, I think they all came, and we trust that God would use that, bless that. And in particular, there's a Christian couple there. There were two couples on their road, non-Christian couples. They'd never been to church before, ever. They turned up and they were just sitting there and they enjoyed it and they didn't rush off. The parents brought all the children. They sat there they listened to something of the gospel message. And we just trust, as absurd as it sounded, I had water pistols, okay? They all got wet. And absurd as that might sound, you think, oh, that's not a traditional gospel message. But actually, it really mattered because that's the way they might remember the gospel message. And we pray that God would use that. But when I go visiting to churches, I am trying to encourage churches to think about how they can support the hearing of the gospel in a way they wouldn't normally do that. And they might say, Paul, we've done that, and it didn't work. But I'm saying to them, well, that's no reason not to try it again. And that is supporting the hearing of the gospel. And those children come back, and we pray that those parents come back. And I'm in contact with the church now saying, what do we do next? Keep it going. Anyone know anyone from this picture? Okay, so anyone know Owen Batstone? Yeah. Right, Owen Batstone. Owen Batstone worked for a church in Ogmore Vale. That is Ogmore Vale. When Owen Batstone was leaving to go to Parkend Presbyterian in Cardiff, I went along to catch up with Owen, and Owen said, look, I'm leaving as the pastor here. What do I do? You know, how do I help the church? So I said, well, why don't we put Wendy Taylor, who's in the middle, who I used to do camps with, EMW camps, the same camp that Dave went on, why don't we put Owen and her husband as overseers in charge of the church whilst you look for a pastor? So we put in place all the leadership to look after the church without a pastor because we wanted to support the hearing of the gospel and keep the gospel being heard, so put in some sort of leadership. And through that, Wendy and Kevin, you see the man on the left picture, on the far left, his name is Dom White. He was the assistant pastor of Grace Church in Bridgend. So I said, listen, you can't find a pastor. So what do? You say, well, we can't find a pastor. Why don't we borrow a pastor? Okay, support the hearing of the gospel, borrow a pastor. Not sure if they'll let us borrow a pastor. So why don't you ask them? So I went along to Grace Church and I said, will you second out your assistant pastor for 6 months to Ogmore Vale? What did they say? They said yes. They said yes. So we seconded out Dom for 6 months. Dom finished his job with Grace Church. He had got a new job. So we said, well, would you stay on for another year at Ogmore Vale as the interim minister for one more year? And with a view to finding the church and helping the church to call a minister, to call a pastor, he agreed. And then on the left picture, you'll see Steve Dunn and his wife Laura, who have just been called as the new pastor and his wife to the church in Ogmore Vale in lockdown. And it just goes to show, you know, sometimes you have to do absurd things and say, well, if you haven't got this, why don't you see if you can borrow it from another church? Borrow a pastor. Why not? It supports hearing the gospel. And so I've worked with Wendy and Kevin, who were the overseers. I worked with Dom to help put paperwork together for his job and help then Dom to put paperwork together for the new pastor, because this is a small church that hasn't got enough people in the church, maybe like yourselves, who've got, you know, elders, deacons and so on. They haven't got all that. And so church leaders might come to me and say, Paul, can you help us put this package together? So I do that with the help of Peter, and that there is his induction on the right-hand side. And so Owen left Park to go to Park End, but he left things in place to make sure the gospel was going to carry on being heard. And so when I had a message the other day that Steve was running his harvest service and he said, you know, 30, he said about 30 non-Christians are coming, you know, supporting the hearing of the gospel by making sure there are leaders in churches. Now, I think I'm not sure about the numbers, but I think I've probably helped about 6 people in the last 3 years to be in leadership in churches that maybe you and I haven't really heard of, where there wasn't leadership already. And generally, it's stabilizing churches to make sure the gospel's being heard week in, week out. It might not be resulting in the church growing astronomically, but it is helping the gospel being heard, and we keep praying that God would use those men and bring people to know him. So that's Ogmore Vale. So right now, Ogmore Vale, tiny, tiny place that has only got 6 members, has got a full-time pastor, where Owen Batstone used to be. This is Bethel Nelson. How many of you know Dave Cox in Bethel Nelson? So, okay, Dave Cox, Bethel Nelson. So, start of September this year, Dave phones me up, what should we do? I've got some ideas about reaching people for the gospel. What should we do? Have you thought about this? Have you thought about that? They put on a church open day on the Saturday, which was over a week ago. The day after, the Saturday, they put on a Sunday guest service. for the same people who came to the open day. The week after, they put on a Macmillan coffee morning. And the day after Macmillan coffee morning, they put on a guest service. And I said to Dave, the whole idea is, you know, you're helping support the hearing of the gospel. People might not come to church, but they might come to this. Share the gospel with them then, but invite them to other things. They can have more of the gospel. And this is the idea of following on. And I think some churches have often said, we see lots of people come to, things, but then they don't come to anything else. So they come to one event, and then they don't come to anything else. We don't see them. Does that make sense? They come to this one, and they don't see them for months and months. So one of the things I try and do with church is help church to think, well, if you were to see them at this, what is the next thing that you're inviting them or offering to them, so that if they are interested in exploring more of the gospel, they can do that. 3,000 invitations went out through letterboxes for those events. Lots of churches have stopped doing these invitations because they're saying, well, nobody's interested, nobody comes along. But this is the point. You put them out, you endure the work that it takes to put 3,000 out. On the fun day, 3 new families turned up that hadn't come to this church before. And Dave Cox, unfortunately, had to self-isolate because his 2 children got COVID back-to-back, so we had to self-isolate twice in a row because he didn't have his second jab. So I had to cover these evangelistic events that I'd said, you know, maybe you should try this. I went there and said, how did you find out about this? We had the invitation through the door. Pandemic. People want to come to things. And church leaders encourage him, saying, look, put something on. Put something on because you care for your communities. And they came. 3 families came. The Sunday, the day after, none of those families came. I wasn't expecting them to. But then there was 2 new people there, a mother and a son. How did you find out about today? We got the invitation through the door. The week after, Macmillan Coffee Morning, 45 people turned up. Most of them were non-Christians. There's a lady there that said, I'm going to come to the service tomorrow. And do you know what you often think when somebody says, I'm going to come to the service tomorrow? Are they going to come? No. Did she come? Yes, she came. And that is the point about saying, look, I am going to put things in place that give people the opportunity to find out more and make sure that when they come, they feel at home. So if there's only a few people there, they feel at home. And we're praying once again. The gospel went out 4 times in one tiny church in the space of a week. We're praying that God would bless the hearing of the gospel. And that's a real challenge for churches, is how do you plan things in such a way that you're giving opportunities for people to keep coming back and to build relationships with the community. And I think that is that's a real challenge of our church communities. But that's a great example of things working. I put it like this, and this is maybe some slightly con. How many people here find? How many people think evangelism is difficult? Do you find anything evangelism difficult? I mean, is evangelism difficult? It's a tricky one, and I think, and the reason is this, and I'm going to be quite controversial. I think helping people hear the gospel, or bringing or inviting people to things, is not difficult. Now, I might be being slightly controversial with that. I can't convert anyone, and you can't convert anyone, but I don't think that bringing people to things or inviting people to things is difficult. Maybe talking to people about the gospel is challenging, but I don't think bringing people or inviting people to things is difficult. And the reason why is this, and you can ask me a question, but it depends what you're bringing them to. It depends what you're bringing them to. And sometimes, I think as churches, we make it too difficult for us to invite people to things. And actually, we might need to rethink what we're asking people to come to. And sometimes people feeling at home, people feeling safe, people feeling like they belong is really important. So church service, is it difficult for people to come to? Maybe, but maybe you know somebody who's stuck at home lonely and you know they're having a hard time. Is it perfectly plausible to say to them, listen, I know you're having a really difficult time. I know you're on your own tonight. I'm off to church, and do you know what? I think you really value coming with me tonight. Just a quiet word. And sometimes it's the way we invite people and what we're inviting them to that really, really do matter. But I think it's actually becoming easier to bring people to things. Lloyd.
Sorry, you said you didn't mind people interrupting.
No, I don't.
Just with that, how do you fight then against the mindset of I can invite someone to an event, but the work of evangelism, I've done my job in getting that person to the event. How do I fight against that mentality of the person of evangelism is the one up the front? I've done my job in getting them along, but now my job's over, it's the person up the front, that's it.
It's complicated. It's complicated. I've done this ministry now for 3 years, and one of the things I started doing was going along to churches and talking about evangelism and doing evangelism training, okay, if that's even a concept, training people to do evangelism. It's complicated because we're all different. And you and I will say things differently. And I'm an Indian, I will be very black and white in the way I say things. We're all different. And I think helping church people to be confident is one thing, but also to be very intentional about wanting to reach people with the gospel. And when I say intentional, I'm simply meaning that you want to reach people. And if I'm honest, if you want to reach people, then what you're basically saying is, I want to reach people genuinely now, and you're asking the Lord to show you how to do that. And that is going to be different for every single one of you. So for some of you, it's going to be an arm round a mum, isn't it? Yeah? And the men wouldn't do that, yeah? And some of the men, it'll be, let's go and do something, and me like saying to Alan, you know, should we meet up for a drink tonight so that you show that you care for them? It's going to be different. When it comes to speaking, you know, in terms of word-based event, that I think is something that we can learn and we can train ourselves with, and that's more of a challenge. But being with people and bringing people to things, that I think is about desire. But also it's about whether, as churches, we put on the right things. And the things that we used to put on pre-pandemic might have to change now post-pandemic. And I think that's also something that is fairly new. But I think it's all about desire. It's all about desire. So if I'm honest, I'm not a very good evangelist, okay? I'm not, yeah? Generally, I'm not. And Andy will probably know this, but I'm actually quite a quiet person, yeah? And I've always been a quiet person, okay? But my prayer since I became a Christian was that God would help me not to be a quiet person, but to be somebody who would go out of my comfort zone to engage with people. So I am actually quiet. So if I wanted to, I could sit here for a whole hour and none of you would have to talk to me and I'd be perfectly fine. I wouldn't have a problem with that at all. I'm a quiet person. But I'm asking God to help me in the things that I'm not so good at, which is why some things kind of come out and they complete Dutch, you know. But I think it's all about desire. Do we have the desire? And if we do, then we pray that God would help us, and that will look different for all of us, and that's really important. I've been to some training sessions and things on evangelism and things on churches, and it's almost as if you feel under pressure to be like the person at the front, and I don't think that's right. I think, what has God equipped you to do? How has God equipped you? What are your gifts? And we're encouraging, you know, we want to encourage evangelists are there and pastors to encourage and equip you for works of service, which is like Mike, for example, in Alpha Place. What is Mike good at? And what can you help Mike with, yeah? It's going to be very different to, you know, Ruth or Hillary. I hope that's not, I might not answer your question, but come back to me. Anyone know where that is? That is Abu Dhabi. Do you know there's an English Presbyterian church in Abu Dhabi? No? Do you all know about the church in Mac? Yeah? So this is once again, it's the classic case of, we know about the church in Mac, but we know there's a bunch of Christians in Abu Dhabi, and there's an English Presbyterian church who would love to have somebody come and lead their church. And once again, labels don't matter. But once again, the Wales Leadership Forum had an email from the church in Abu Dhabi. They didn't know what to do with the church in Abu Dhabi. And I happened to know the person who'd had the email. And they said, oh, Paul, there's a church in Abu Dhabi. And I said, well, the next time I'm driving around North Wales, I'll drop in at the church in Abu Dhabi. And I dropped in, met the people who go to the church in Abu Dhabi, and building a relationship with them, with a view to praying for them, with a view to putting out on my newsletter that there's a gospel church in Aber Dyfi that's looking for a leader. And Aber Dyfi is one of the nicest places to live in Wales, apparently. So if you know anyone who's kind of semi-retired, that's looking for a nice place to minister to a group of people that live near the beach and don't really need an income, but, you know, would like... Providence is that there might be somebody here tonight who God is calling to just dip into Aber Dyfi. But you see, that's the point, is that whenever there's an opportunity to explore something, I never turn it down, because it could be that God is going to show you something that you have not seen before. And I think as Christians, we just don't want to dismiss them, yeah? And I remember, you know, in Elijah's time when he was getting all depressed and he's saying, oh, I'm the only one left. And God says, no, you're not. I've got all my people everywhere. And that's a real encouragement in Wales. As I travel Wales, is that there are Christians, prayerful Christians, in the places that you would least expect. And they are struggling in their churches to reach out with the gospel, but they are there. And I suppose we're confident, isn't it, was when God starts a good work and God is working by Spirit, there are converted people in Aber Dyfi. So Aber Dyfi, you can pray for the church. And Andy, if you're looking for a job, you can...
Caravan. He's come to this area from Pontypool, I'm not sure, but his name is Philip Mann.
Right. John Mann.
John Mann. And he says he's come to the area, he's a retired pastor, and he wants to find a fellowship somewhere in this area.
Yeah.
Aber Dyfi isn't far.
There we go. John
yeah.
Mann.
John Mann. So... So once again, in the grand scheme of the way the Lord works, it's John Mann was the pastor in Ystrad Mynach. I contacted him, or he contacted me. I went over to his house in the pandemic. He said, I want to retire. I want to find somewhere else to go to. I'm looking for somebody to come here. And then we put it out on a prayer letter, and then he contacted the church in... Talbot Green, Andrew Love's church, Tabor Clantrissant, and then Henry, who's from Tabor Clantrissant, became called as the pastor to Ystrad Mynach. And it just shows this wonderful network of actually sometimes the resource that you're looking for is in another church, and you've got to ask, and you've, as absurd as it sounds, you don't suppose you know anyone who's looking for a pastorate, do you? You know? And maybe it's the same thing here. You don't know anyone that's looking for something to do because they're bored because they're retired, is it? You know, John Mann, Andy Christofide, you don't know. You just don't know. So why not just ask the question? Or why not say, come over for a weekend and see what's on. But they're looking. But there are churches dotted around that we have not heard of. And God is doing a work there. This is Hope for the Valleys. Anyone know Hope for the Valleys? Anyone heard of Hope for the Valleys? Mick Moffitt. So Hope for the Valleys is a collaboration between a few Valleys churches and Scripture Union to set up a trust. And then Mick Moffitt is the person who's working for this trust to help share the gospel between, you know, in secondary schools and youth groups and so on. But once again, it started in the pandemic where you couldn't go into schools. And then the trust got in touch with me and said, look, can I help Mick to work out how do you start things when you can't go to places? So part of my job is also kind of helping other kind of initiatives like this and helping other people who are evangelists to how do we plan the next 3 months or 6 months so that we're not going to get discouraged, because you're trying to build contact, you're trying to find out where God's showing you opportunities. So it is also supporting people like Mick. So I get phone calls, I get text messages, I get pastors ask me questions, I get COVID-related queries, I get health and safety queries, I get all sorts of bizarre queries, but they're all to do with, how do you help somebody like Mick now? How do you help him share the gospel? Mick's looking for a church. How, you know, does he know the area? So you're spending time with people. It's taking, you know, a couple of hours out of your week to go and sit down, have coffee with them, have them for a meal, and to share with them what's going on so that you're supporting and equipping them to do the work of an evangelist. So it's not just churches, it's individuals as well. But Mick has got a drug addiction background, and if you know the Valleys, that's a good fit. In pandemic, he couldn't get into schools. So what does Mick do? He says, well, have you seen cage football? Have you all heard of cage football? Yeah. Anyone heard of cage football? Cage football is a cage, and you play football inside the cage. So what you do is, you don't have to bring children into the building in a pandemic where you're all worried about COVID. You bring the cage and you put it outside on your car park, and then you get kids to go in the cage outside and play football, and they have competitions. And then as they're having all that stuff outside, you know, and there's other activities going on, you get to share some of the gospel. So once again, how do you support the hearing of the gospel? You get Mick to come along, you get Mick to go into the Valleys, you get a cage, and the cage is simply this, is lots of, you know, galvanized steel, racks, and they slot together, and you've got a portable football pitch right on your church. And you invite everyone to it. And what's happening? Church runs this, church runs that, and then you get families coming to these days, you get kids coming, and you take it to the schools, and the school's happy because it's outside, it's not inside. And so you get round, how do you help people hear the gospel? Well, you do things that sound slightly absurd. And if somebody said cage football, sounds absurd, doesn't it? Cage football was around 10 years ago, and it kind of died a death, but it's resurrected itself. Sometimes our answers are stuff that we've already had in history. So that's Mick, and Mick's doing a great job helping Valleys families hear the gospel. Phil Jenkins, anyone know who Phil Jenkins is? Yeah, so here's a really quick one. So Phil Jenkins was one of the leaders at Highfields Church way back. He went to Athens, 5 years in Athens, he came back. My neighbour, to my parents, works for the Wales Leadership Forum, Chris Street. You remember Chris Street? Chris Street says to me, Phil Jenkins is coming back from Athens. Do you know any work? Do you know if there's any work around? Because, you know, we're thinking about having Phil work for the Wales Leadership Forum part-time. So I said I'll have a look around because I'm travelling around churches. Who else do I know in Cardiff that needs a bit of help? Owen Batstone. And Owen Batstone says to me, he says, look, I'm looking to start this new programme. It's going to help people hear the gospel. But I need to look for a couple of people to help me. So I'm like, have you heard of Phil? No, I've never heard of Phil. And it, once again, how do you help people hear the gospel? What Owen needs in Park End Presbyterian in Cardiff is a wise pair of hands to help him do the ministry of helping people share the gospel. And Park End is an older demographic church. And Owen's had to do a lot of funerals in the last 2 years since he's got there. And Owen, if anyone knows Owen Batstone, he's on one end of the spectrum. But Phil is really gentle. He's been in ministry for a long time. He's kind of come into the end of his ministry. And he hasn't got a reputation to kind of, you know, live up to. He hasn't got like an agenda. So I said to Owen, I said, you know, I know you're looking for this and you can this. You know, I said, look, can I offer you a suggestion? Well, I've worked with you in Ogmore Vale, so he offered him a suggestion. I said, well, would you like to meet Phil? So I introduced Phil to Owen, and I said, have you ever thought about, you know, instead of having this kind of person, you actually have somebody who's got a bit more experience and kind of can temper the kind of things that you do. And in the end, they introduced themselves, and you've got somebody, as absurd as it sounds, who left the denomination 40 years ago and went into the independent church and has now gone back into the denomination to help the hearing of the gospel. And as absurd as all these things sound, every example that I've been trying to give you gives you a flavour of what I'm doing. I suppose I'm working in the shadows with churches, getting to know pastors, getting to know some of the challenges of running churches. And there are some pastors that don't need the help because they've got their own teams, and that's wonderful. But there's an awful lot of pastors who are struggling, and there's an awful number of churches that don't have the resources, and they ask questions, and you're spending hours with them trying to work out, well, could it be this, could it be this? And sometimes you give them advice, and sometimes you've got to equip them, sometimes you've got to go and spend time with them. I'm preaching usually 3 Sundays a month. There's Bible studies, there's training, there's putting things together or contracts together, but it is simply saying that actually your resources for helping people to share the gospel might not be as far as you think they are. And a bit like Jesus when he comes to his disciples and they say to him, you know, we've been fishing all night and we haven't caught anything. And he says, try it again. And they're like, nah, not going to work. Just try it again. And I think that really kind of gives you a sum of what I try to do is maybe what I'm asking is quite simple, is do the things that you think you've already done, but try it again, but maybe tweak the way you're doing it and asking that God will bless. So Blina, anyone know Blina Evangelical Church? Blina Evangelical Church, Alan Peterson, on a Friday night pre-pandemic, they'd have about 40 young people. So this church has only got a handful, it's single figures. They get about 40 young people. It's packed, you know? And Blina is a very deprived area. But what's really encouraging, they started their youth groups back again just the other week. They've all come back. You know, it's an encouragement, isn't it, when you think about it, that most churches would say, well, 18 months has passed, and we're not sure if they're going to come back. But no. They really can come back. The principle is just get on with it. Just get on with it. And they're live streaming. They've only got a handful of people. There's a couple of other churches live streaming. They've only got a couple of handful of people. And we've borrowed people from one church and asked them to come to Blina and said, can you help out for 4 weeks and help them to kind of establish this? So they've got youth work going on now, but they borrow from different churches. So they borrow from Mick Moffitt, who's just working for Hope for the Valleys. They borrow from me, so they borrow my children as well, so I can bring my children and, you know, add the numbers up. They borrow from Newport. And this is people travelling 20 minutes, half an hour to help the hearing of the gospel. Our resources are often in sight of us, and we just need to ask. I kind of finished there, but I wanted to give you a snapshot, because these are all different churches across literally the whole of Wales, whether it's Aberystwyth, or whether it's South West in Roche, whether it's Rhythlon or Deeside. But it is supporting pastors. It is getting alongside churches and asking them, look, how can I be of help? But you need to sit down for an hour and have a coffee with somebody. Nodva in Abersuchen. Yeah, I've been to Nodva. So John Funnell is a pastor in Abersuchen, Nodva. As you probably know, Peter, who is one of the elders there, died recently. So John lost the senior elder. And then a few weeks later, his other elder resigned, stepped down, and moved to another church. So in the space of a few weeks, you know, John was left with any other elders. So I've been kind of meeting with John and helping John and helping him bounce ideas off. Because when you, it's a bit like this, when you have a shock to the system, sometimes you think, well, I've got to do this, but sometimes you've just got to slow down and take a step back and say, you know, what other options have we? So I support churches like John as well, meeting with pastors and helping them. And I took some beds around the other day. They have homeless people in the church. I don't know if you have any homeless people living in the church, but somebody was in Newport, homeless. They ended up in Abersuchen. There's no beds in the church, so it's taking some beds round and, you know, some... So just like Abersuchen, which are in a quite a deprived area, helping people hear the gospel, put up this homeless person for a couple of nights. And when they're putting up this homeless person for a couple of nights and the men's meeting is on at the same time, they're saying to the homeless person who's literally in the room next door, come and sit in with all the other men, and as we're having this men's meeting, you're going to hear something of the gospel. It's always the same thing. How do you help the hearing of the gospel? And if that means housing a homeless person, then let's do it. But I think in the last 3 years, I think I must have been in contact with well over 100 churches now in Wales, you know, from different denominations and backgrounds. I've not visited all of them, but I've been in contact with them. And some of them have said, thank you very much, but no thanks. You know, but some people, you know, that's the reality of it. Not every church is wanting to move forward and expand its hearing of the gospel. Some churches will struggle to do that. And in some places, some churches are closing, and some churches are closing down and not going to reopen again. And so we've seen that across Wales as well, which is sad, but that's the reality. It's accelerated what was probably already there, but the pandemic has kind of been the final, nail in the coffin.